smile. My fame precedes me, I see.
Best not to get cocky, kiddo, she said.
She walked over, stripping off a leather gauntlet. She enveloped Valera in a powerful embrace, then thrust a hand at Max, which he shook.
Max, this is Christina. Play nice, or she'll break your arms.
Christina laughed.
Maybe not your arms, but I'll sure break your bank.
Max nodded vaguely. I'm feeling a little lost. I mean, you're the heater girls, right?
That's right,
said Charmy.
It's one of our things.
Yeah, but, I mean, you make this stuff. Charmy shrugged.
You thought we cast a spell or something?
Max glanced at Valera, who offered no help, her serene expression suggesting she was enjoying his floundering. No, but I thought, you know, you'd get pills from somewhere, add your mark up and sell them on. That's what blammers do, right?
What? Did you just call us?
Jola's eyes were wide. And then they were all advancing on him, and Valera had taken a neat step to the left.
Perhaps you should be cracking his limbs for him, Chris.
Max held up his hands. Close to, they all smelled pretty rank. I meant no offence.
No offence? Then that's okay, girls.
Jola clapped her hands together.
You think I'm a fucking sales rep, boy?
Of course I didn't think that. I just thought... Max looked to Valera for help again. She shrugged. The two heater girls closed in, and Max backed away as far as he could before fetching up against the shelf and the uneven bone wall.
What exactly did you just think?
Asked Charmy, her slimy leather apron pushed against his formerly mostly clean fatigues.
Perhaps old Leaky Brain here can't quite recall, said Jola.
She shook her head.
Blammer, are you for real?
He looks, but he don't see,
said Charmy, one hand in its filthy gauntlet stroking his cheek. He tried to pull back, but only succeeded in cracking his head against the wall. Christina clapped her hands.
All right, back to work. We got orders to make up. Best not scare him away before he pays. They come in as buyers and end up as users, right?
Charmy gave his cheek a final, echoingly solid pat, before turning her back on him for her still. Jola's look of disdain was long and meaningful. Max was sweating a lot, and not just because of the heat. He blew out his cheeks, and Christina regarded him for a moment.
How long you been on this lizard, kiddo?
Coming up 9 months now. Christina raised her eyebrows.
Barely out of the womb, then. Better get your ears and eyes open more and learn how things work.
I'm a flyer. I'm amazing at my job. Nothing else matters.
And because you're going to fall, it ain't worth investing in anything but flying and fucking. Right, kiddo?
Frankly, yes, said Max, belatedly discovering a little anger. I'm chucking away most of my life for the greater good. I deserve respect, because in a few years I'll be dribbling in landfill. You're just fucking pushers feeding off my sacrifice. Max heard Valera's sharp intake of breath and saw Jola and Charmy spin back round. Christina raised a hand to keep them back.
Well, you win the prize for being the most self-centred tool I have ever had the misfortune to meet. And given I meet mainly Drake pilots, you're up against some pretty stiff competition.
She turned to go, and the others went back to their work. Max stared at Valera, who shrugged in exasperation.
What is wrong with you? She hissed. Just remember who you're condemning right now, eh?
Christina had disappeared back into the other room and had turned the music up. Max rubbed a hand over his face and followed her as far as the opening.
Sorry. I'm sorry, he said.
Christina turned round and cupped a hand to her ear. Max raised his voice.
I'm sorry.
She flipped the music off bang on time, and his apology bounced around the tiny space.
You do deserve respect, she said. And so do we. Apology accepted this time. Now, what do you want?
I need heaters for my wing. I've got money for 30 days' worth. Can we deal?
Christina nodded and sparked up another cigarette.
We can. Got the sample?
Max's heart missed a beat, and the look on his face gave him away. Christina smiled.
Gotcha, kiddo.
She pushed past him.
Okay, Val, hand it over.
Valera pulled a small phial from her fatigue's pocket, shook the red liquid within, and handed it over. Christina took it, and Max saw sadness in her eyes, just momentarily.
Your wing. Kalani, right? I'm sorry, kiddo. Tough on her. Good pilot. Make yourself comfortable. Well, as comfortable as you can.
She gestured at the meager seating.
What is that?
Asked Max.
Blood,
said Christina, flipping the phial to Jola, who caught it deftly.
Let's get this batch made up.
Blood.
Can't make a heater without it, said Christina.
I thought... Actually, I don't know what I thought. What else do you make them from, then? Stuff that smells bad, for sure.
Spot on, said Christina. We're not at the root of the tale by chance. Heaters are synthesized from digestive secretions, harvested from a gland that runs by the large intestine. To put it bluntly, we stick needles in its arse to get what we need. All very glam.
Lovely, said Max. How did you come by it? Just stuck needles in all sorts of places till something worked?
Christina's easy smile disappeared.
No, kiddo. I used to work for the ERC program. We all did. Long story and none of your business, but we need to stay close to the action, so to speak. We need data to improve our product. Just understand that I wouldn't be living in this crap hole unless I felt I had no other choice. All right.
Max shrugged.
What does the blood do, then?
Christina pursed her lips. Valera stepped in.
You get on, Chris. I'll explain. He's like a curious child, isn't he?
Like, said Jola.
Valera pointed at seats around the small table, and they both sat. Max watched Christina and Jola pipetting Kalani's blood onto a petri dish and setting it inside a small machine that hissed when they turned it on. Further down the bench, Sharmi had set a flask of clear liquid on an effluent burner. A sour stench rose from it. He felt uncomfortably small and ignorant.
It's simple enough, said Valera. Heaters have to be DNA typed to the individual. They use the blood to synthesize a horribly complex chemical linkage that allows them to blend the base structure with the human DNA.
So, not simple at all then, said Max. Expensive business.
Valera hunkered down in her seat and folded her arms.
Very. Now if you don't mind, I could do with some rest.
Sure.
Max watched her close her eyes and then open one and pierce him with her stare.
Tell me you brought the EM stick.
I brought the EM stick, said Max, patting his pocket. The squad were very generous.
Good.
She closed her eye.
And good night.
Max tried to doze too, and he probably did nod off from time to time, but mostly he was plagued by an image of a clock ticking round with excruciating sloth. He tried to watch the heater girls work, but that was dull too. At one stage, Sharmi pointed out the kettle and coffee grounds, and he made them all a drink, heavily tainted with the all-pervasive smell in the lab, and he was glad of the distraction. He had so many questions. Now he had the time to think about where he was and what it meant. But the only time he opened his mouth to ask one of them, a sharp kick on his ankle betrayed the fact that Valera wasn't quite as asleep as she made out. It was 3 hours before Sharmi set a small cardboard box on the table in front of him.
It's all in basic doses,
she said, handing it over.
Hypo in there too. One shot into the top of the thigh every day works in a couple of minutes. That's 1,500 euro marks up front.
Max pulled the EM stick from his pocket and handed it to Sharmi, who flicked out her peepalm and made the off-grid transfer. "Don't spend it all at once," he said, taking the stick back and noting the small, untraceable balance still on board.
"Remember, heaters are only one product we offer that stops this behemoth's crew going collectively insane. We've got uppers, downers, sleepers, stimmers, gutfuls, shitters, sky-highs, double-ohs, grainers, flip-outs and halos. And that's just the common stuff."
"Good to know. Thanks."
"You'll do all right, kiddo," said Christina. "Time to go."
She gave Valera a hug, punched Max on the shoulder, and turned away. Sharmi blew him a kiss. Jola didn't even acknowledge their leaving. Back in D-144, Max found himself trembling. Valera closed the crate.
"You all right?" she asked. "Good to go?"
"I think so. I just... someone will be doing that for me one day. Makes you think."
"You were due some perspective, I guess. Shame it had to be this way."
"Why don't the brass just shut it down?"
Valera blew out her cheeks and walked towards the warehouse door.
"That's a big question. Later, all right? We need to get back. Kalani can't wait."
Chapter 9. The sheer excitement of being one of those chosen to study sentient alien biology was only topped by the honour of that calling. I remain blessed by my fortune, but saddened by the direction the research has taken. Dr. Helena Markov, Head of Research, Extra-Reptilian Construct Organization.
"Where the hell have you been?"
Jessie shot up from her chair the moment Valera and Max entered the otherwise deserted common room.
"Muller's about to page the whole behemoth for you. You were wanted an hour ago and it was urgent then."
"Well, I guess he knows where I've been. Where's everyone else?" asked Valera.
Jessie shrugged.
"They were all sleeping when the call came. Funny how everyone had seen you at Gargan's and then gone straight to bed, isn't it?"
"What did you say?"
"Not a lot. I mean, everyone's free to sleep wherever with whoever after a mission, right? And it is the middle of the night."
She noticed the box in Max's hands.
"It really took you this long to get that?"
"They had to complete some other orders first. You know how it is," said Valera. "I'd better head to Flightcom. Put the call through and stop the all hail."
"Aye, Skipper."
"You know what to do, Max. And when you're done, get some sleep."
"Good luck, Skipper,"
he said vaguely, eyes already on Kalani's pod.
"Your support is overwhelming."
"My what?"
"Never mind. Go away."
Max hurried along the corridor and rapped on Kalani's door.
"Go away," came a groggy voice. "She's not in here. I've told you already."
"Can't do that," said Max. "I've got something you need."
"Oh, it's you. Thought it was that fucking lackey from Flightcom again. Door's unlocked."
Max walked in, the light from outside framing his shadow and casting it long over the bed. The room smelled of sex and alcohol, and he grinned.
"Hey, Grim."
"Morning, boss."
She was the second hump on the far side of the bed.
"Glad you two are having fun. I've been shouted at by smelly scientists in an even smellier flesh tunnel all night. Just the evening I had planned."
Max closed the door, and Risa Kalani flicked the low light on. She squinted at him and cast about for her T-shirt as Max perched on the bed. Next to her, Grim was on the move too. She hopped out of bed and pulled on her sweats.
"No need for you to go," said Kalani. "Well, I thought..."
"Not on my account," said Max. "Besides, you might need to do this sometime."
Grim nodded.
"Okay."
She scrambled back onto the bed and sat behind Risa, legs straddling her and arms locking around the ailing pilot's waist. She leaned her head on Risa's shoulder.
"I should take a picture," said Max, "but it would make everyone cute puke."
"Just open Pandora's box, will you?"
Kalani was trying to smile. but couldn't take her eyes from the plain package Max was holding. "It's really simple," said Max, unclipping the fastenings and lifting the box lid off. 30 shots. One into the top of your thigh, last thing every night. It'll make you really hot for an hour or two afterwards. That'll wear off before you have to report to the ERC for a briefing." Max had been staring into the box, pointing at the files and hypo. He looked up, and both Risa and Grim had tears in their eyes. "It'll be okay," said Max. "This stuff will keep you flying forever." As if by prearranged signal, they hugged him.
"You're an idiot, Max," said Risa. "But I'm glad you're our idiot."
"Hey, any time," said Max, enjoying the embrace, his imagination wandering a little. They seemed to sense that too, and pushed him away. "Want to give it a go? A jab, I mean, of the hypodermic?" Grim dissolved into laughter, falling backwards onto the bed, hooting as she tried to calm herself. Risa just shook her head.
"There really is no better sight than a man digging an ever deeper hole for himself. Come on, hand it over. Grim, get a grip. You're doing this for me. Can't stand injections."
Grim snorted and gathered herself. Her nimble fingers quickly assembled hypo and file. She spread her hands.
"Pick a thigh. Left. No, right. No, left. Holy ass," said Grim.
She shifted Reese's t-shirt up a little, placed the hypo on her left thigh.
"Ready?"
Risa bit her lip and nodded.
"The fight starts here."
Grim triggered the hypo.
"No turning back now." "It's cold," said Risa.
"Not for long," said Grim. "Come on, best you lie down again."
Grim plumped up a couple of pillows, and Risa lay against them. Even in the dim light, Max could see her cheeks beginning to flush and sweat appear on her brow.
"Wow," he said.
"You should try being on this side of it."
Kalani shifted in sudden discomfort.
"Fuck."
"One day I will be."
Max had to force himself to stay, while Risa's body heated up and the pain intensified. She stripped off her sweat-soaked t-shirt. Grim grabbed a towel, soaked it in cold water, and mopped her down repeatedly, though it had precious little effect. Risa's eyes were wide and frightened. Her body shook, and she writhed, contorted, and gasped, but she never once called out. Unsure what to do at first, Max soaked another towel and held it to her wrists and mopped her torso. He stared into her eyes, trying to give her something to focus on, and wished he hadn't. Kalani was terrified, desperate for it to stop. The unfairness, the random nature of when the fall struck, lit a sharp anger within him. Their commanders never saw this. Perhaps they should.
"Keep looking at me, Risa. You'll get through it, and then we'll fly again. Hold on to that. Hold on to me."
She shook the towel off her wrists and grabbed his hands, a horrible spasm racking her body and drawing a moan from her slack mouth, from which hung lines of drool. Her nails dragged at his skin. His anger intensified. That she should be so desperate to get back in her drake, she'd put herself through this. He wondered if Command ever considered the human suffering at the end of the glory times of drake piloting. Of course they didn't. It was more than an hour before Risa cooled off enough to lie still. Her breathing calmed to a more moderate and regular pace, and she shuffled back under the covers. Even the fear in her eyes subsided.
"That had better have been worth it," she managed, her voice dry and croaky.
"It gets easier, doesn't it?"
asked Grim, looking squarely at Max.
"I don't see why it should," said Kalani. "Thanks for sticking around, Max. Max?"
Max stared at Kalani, and all he could see was himself dialed forward a couple of years, when the fall began to sharpen its claws and rake at his mind.
"I always assumed I would be okay, that it wouldn't bother me.
But now I've seen this shit firsthand. I'm not.
Not what?
Asked Risa.
Okay with it. Not at all.
What are you talking about?
This! Risa, it's not right. This thing will destroy you. The price for flying shouldn't be so high. There has to be another way.
We'll go through it,
said Kalani quietly.
Think I first saw it about 3 months out, too. First time facing the fall, and it's no longer something you can dodge, is it? It stinks, but the only thing to do is get back in your Drake and remind yourself what a fucking amazing gift it is.
And then remember nothing when my brains start rotting.
Max flushed and squeezed his eyes shut.
Sorry, Risa, I didn't...
No sweat. They say you never forget the touch, though.
Who says?
The Fallen.
Max studied his lap and the box of heaters that leered up at him, representing inescapable pain and a haunted, miserable fate.
I should go, said Max, voice catching in his throat. Try and get some sleep.
Kalani nodded.
Thank you, Max.
Max shrugged.
For what? Putting you through all that? Hard to believe it's worth it, you know?
It's worth it,
said Kalani.
You'll understand when your time comes.
Max pushed himself to his feet, feeling drained and hollow.
Try and get some sleep, eh?
Don't you dare fly without me, Halloran.
Never without my wing.
When the door closed behind him, Max leaned against the wall for a moment, his sighing breath reminding him he was tainted by the stench of the heater girl's lab. He should shower, but he honestly didn't think he could stand for that length of time. Even the few paces to his pod looked an impossible distance.
It was quiet. The squad rack was otherwise at peace, and the movement of the hog evidenced by the gentle vibrations through her body.
Max forced himself along the corridor and into his pod. The light was on, and Annabeth was waiting for him.
Oh, thank God,
he said, and fell into her embrace.
Let it out, if you need to,
she whispered.
There'd be no way back from there,
he said, needing to distract himself and finding a way.
Thought you were on an early.
Annabeth gently loosened the embrace.
Not now. All sorties are delayed. We've all been invited to an outpouring of nauseating bullshit from President Corsini via vidlink tomorrow at 09:30.
That would normally be terrible news, said Max.
How did she do?
She was incredible. I was the wreck. Pathetic, really.
Annabeth kissed him.
You were there for her. That's what counts. Come on, come to bed.
She began pulling his shirt up over his head.
Thought it was just your clothes that stank, but it seems it's your skin as well.
Max found himself laughing.
Sorry, I'll go shower.
Don't be an idiot, I don't care. Not tonight, anyway.
She's so strong, you know. Risa, I mean.
Yeah, but you need to watch her.
She'll know when it's time to stop,
said Max. Annabeth's face was sad.
That's the trouble. She won't.
Chapter 10. We could combine alien and Terran DNA in every other extra-reptilian construct, but with the Fire Drake, every attempt failed, hence their keen minds. We have to balance the need for Drake intelligence against that to protect the human mind in order to deliver an effective weapon. Every further move we make tips that balance in the Drake's favour. Professor Carl Aldous, Neurological Science Research Lead, ERC Programme. The theatre had originally been designed for live performances, but its primary use was as a briefing hall for ground and air missions. Every one of the 2,000 seats was taken. The Heart of Granite's command team, along with Alexandra Solomon, were seated among the drake pilots, ground lizard jockeys, senior civil servant administrators, and army officers. The remaining seats had been allocated to carefully selected marines. It made for a bright and noisy atmosphere, which, along with the glaring ceiling lights, was most unwelcome for Max, who needed another 3 or 4 hours in the sack. He kept Kalani in front of him, and they were directed to the fifth row, center block, right behind Flight Commander Muller. Max swore under his breath.
"Morning, sir."
Muller turned his head fractionally and raised an eyebrow.
"You'll recall how I mentioned that nothing on this behemoth ever happens by accident?"
"Everything you say is a learning experience, sir," said Max.
"I don't even want to feel your breath on my collar."
"It would be an honour to hold my breath for the duration of our glorious leader's inspirational speech, sir."
"And how are you, Kalani?"
asked Muller, his gaze fixing her abruptly.
"Fine, sir,"
said Kalani brightly, perhaps too brightly.
"Really? Halloran told me you had some nasty bruises from yesterday's skirmish. Your squadron leader said you were extremely tired. A remarkable recovery, then."
"A cold compress and a good night's sleep work wonders, sir,"
said Kalani, her voice even and confident.
"Bruises come with the job."
"Mind how you go. Remember to get checked out if you feel there's anything amiss."
"Of course, sir."
Anything else Muller might have said was cut off, as the main lights began to dim, and Commander Avery walked on stage. The audience stood to attention.
"At ease. The President has recorded a video address. Please refrain from spontaneous applause until it is complete."
Laughter rang around the theatre.
"For context, I should remind you all that the presidential elections are in 18 months' time. When the address is over, the following will remain for mission briefings. Inferno X, Lava Flow A, Hammer Claws G, and 2nd Battalion, 1st Regiment, the Annihilators."
Avery made a hand signal and walked quickly from the stage. The remaining lights dimmed, and a huge screen displayed the flag of United Europa, a graphical representation of all the territories within its compass, set on a background of 3 vertical blue, black, and yellow stripes. Easily the dullest flag of all the warring factions. The flag faded to a shot of Corsini behind his desk, all oily smile and bespoke suit. Exactly how he thought a statesman should look. The ornate wood adorning the walls, the paintings of ancient battlefield victories, the leather-inlaid mahogany desk, the banks of information screens set on the left and right of the desk, and his hands resting on the desktop, fingers linked.
"My friends, I wish I possessed your courage. For almost 7 years, you have kept our borders secure and our children safe, and we are in awe of your valour."
Max prayed this was going to be a short version of one of Corsini's trademark inspirational speeches, rather than a long address, but it hadn't started in promising fashion.
"Today, I want to send you one clear message. I've got your backs," said Corsini. "There are minorities, vocal minorities, who would have you pulled from the battlefield, returned home without the victories you fight for every single day. Without recognition of the sacrifices you make, and those who lay down their lives each and every day. So, I am fighting every day to support you, to ensure your return will be with victory in your hearts, to give meaning to sacrifice."
There was some applause then, desultory and brief.
"But be aware. I stand against the appeasers, hiding their cowardice behind sympathy for your families, ignoring your choice to fight for our cause. They are blind to the dangers of withdrawing from the battlefield. If I am not here to stand with you following the election, I fear what the future holds. Not for me. For you."
This speech wasn't going quite the way Max had expected, and, uniquely, he found himself listening.
and the quiet in the theatre meant everyone else was, too. Despite Corsini's unusual honesty, however, there remained an inevitability to his direction.
"These appeasers need to be stopped. And you, the true backbone of United Europa, can deliver that blow."
"Here it comes," Max thought.
"It is in your hands to win this war and return as heroes. I know you are tired. I also know you are on the brink of a breakthrough in Mid-Africa. Meanwhile, our armies in the Balkans gain momentum, and we have successfully halted enemy advances in South America. In the terms of historic wars fought across our lands, it is time for the final push. One extra effort from each of you serving in United Europa's extraordinary armed forces in Mid-Africa. We are on the brink. With one mighty heave, we will break them. You can do this. You will do this. For your country, for your comrades, and for those you love. Honor the memory of those who cannot return. United Europa needs you now. Thank you."
"Corker," said Max, "there's no way we can fail now." There was a murmur of conversation, growing in volume, as people began to file out. Muller stood and turned a bleak look on Max.
"Keep it to yourself, Helleran. Still, you'll soon have your first chance to prove your point. You're off on an obs and recon circuit this afternoon."
"An ORC? Why, with respect, are you sending Inferno X?" asked Valera.
Muller smiled.
"It's an ORC with attitude."
"Sort of an Uruk high, then, you mean?" said Max.
"Holy Mother, you've read a book," said Muller. "I'm almost impressed, Helleran."
"Well, I saw a vid..."
"No, the ancient Jackson classic, or the truly awful Katasami remake."
"Who's Jackson, sir?"
"Never mind. Hope kindled by you is only ever a brief spark in a deluge, isn't it?"
Muller sighed and moved towards the stage. The theatre was cleared except for those required to stay and hear the briefing, and they bunched up in the front 10 rows. Solomon and Avery had left with Kirby, leaving Flight Commander Muller the last of the executive team in the room.
"Right, I'll make this brief," said Muller. "We've been conducting long-range recon, and we've identified a mid-af behemoth in the central Vermelho C-zone, alone and seriously overdue a regeneration cycle. Clearly, we need more intel. So we have increased our pace and are now running ahead of the Steelback. Naturally, that means we have increased our risk, as there are 3 mid-af behemoths in the zone. So, Annihilators, you are on point for the next 4-day cycle, and will pay close attention to southern vectors. Lava Flow and Hammer Claws, you are on combat air patrol. Full details to follow in the briefing ping. Inferno, you'll be flying OBS and recon."
Pilots from the other squads jeered, and Inferno X gave them the mandatory finger.
"Enough," said Muller. "I need observation on speed, leg sync, how quickly they launch their drakes, what they have on the ground, potential vulnerabilities. Get me shots of dry armor if you can, and on no account engage. Fly smart. C1 in, C2 on point, and C3 on high obs. If your intel confirms it's vulnerable, you'll be heading back in for a strike in a couple of days. Any questions, Val X?"
"Has the lizard got a name, sir?"
Muller smiled.
"Sadly, it isn't the Virunga, so don't get too excited. It's an older one, the Maputo. This is the break Corsini was talking about, so bring me back something, eh?"
"Are we testing enemy Drake fitness on the chase?" asked Valera.
"Negative. Don't risk yourselves. We assume the Drakes will be on peak or close to, but the Maputo might be sluggish, making tail up a trial. That's the sort of intel I need. If we're a go for assault, it'll be our last before the Granite takes her own big swim. So let's go out on a high. Okay?"
"Roger that."
"You're all away at 1400. Fly well, and don't fall.
Muller stared squarely at Kalani, who smiled back.
And before you fly, report to the ERC for brain pattern scans. Dismissed.
It was another day of blazing sun and scorching heat along the northern borders of the Nubish Desert. The battle for the Vermelho seacoast was into its second year, and the prize for United Europa, should they prevail, was dominance of the entire North Af and Senaf region, on a line that could be drawn almost exactly along latitude 5 degrees north. A distance of almost 4,000 kilometres coast to coast. This was Corsini's goal, and it was no coincidence that Solomon had arrived just before yet another final push. Max had no idea if it would win them the war, but even he could see the huge geographical superiority the territory would give them. And the land they'd captured, once reformed, irrigated and planted, it would make United Europa the most powerful bloc in the world. Trouble was, the MAFs and the Sambas wanted it for exactly the same reason. The MAFs were regrouping, having lost the fight on the shores of the Mediterranean and still controlled the south-central region. And the Sambas, a long way from their South American homeland, waited to frustrate any army that looked like it might be getting the upper hand. Right now, that was UE, of course. All any side needed was someone else to make an error, and it looked like the MAFs had made one, leaving a Behemoth too far from water when it had to replenish. Slow, weak, vulnerable. The squadron was flying high in the glorious blue sky on a south-southeasterly heading. Vision was excellent, the thermals were riding easy, and the prevailing wind blew across them east to west. Beneath them, ground forces advanced across uncontested land with geckos, iguanas, and basilisk outriders making up the bulk of the movement. Somewhere down there, the annihilators would be pressing out even further, trying to establish line of sight with the potential battleground. And just beyond it was the Maputo. It was best not to look too hard at the ground itself. Years of war, the advance and retreat of 5 different regional blocs trying to take control, had left much of it ruined beyond recognition. Max wasn't one to worry about what had been destroyed by war, but every now and again, the scale of the devastation, the destruction of land in order to own land, got to him. And holy shit alone knew how many species had been eradicated in the process. It was a fucked up world, and he was doing his bit. Whether he was making it more or less fucked up, though, he'd leave to the armchair philosophers.
Chevron orders, said Valera. Step X and C3, high altitude observation. Hal X and C2, you have my back. C1, you're coming with me to stir the nest. Under no circumstances wander into the Maputo's firing arcs. Stick to your patterns, keep the chatter to a minimum, and break on my order. No one gets a toasting. Everyone comes home.
Roger that, skipper, said Lankovsky of C1, echoing the squad.
Inferno X, flight comm, contact imminent. We have a small group of enemy drakes at your 10 o'clock, 10 blips in all. Not a threat, but be aware. Flight comm out.
Inferno X, Val X, form chevrons. Mission is green.
Max opened his chevron comm.
C2, listen up. We'll be taking in the sights of the stunning Nubish Desert from a height of 400 today, with views of the beautiful Maputo with its peeling scale, comedy multiple leg limp, and, we hope, arthritic tail lift to your right during the flight. We will also observe the piloting skills of C1, and while we are unable to toast any fucker who comes too close, we can shout and make funny arm gestures to scare them off. I trust you'll all have a lovely afternoon.
There was silence for a moment.
You really are a prat, Max,
said Monteith.
Chapter 11. It was apparent early on that the aliens used organic matter in all their machines and all their vehicles. It took the world's best a decade to work out how, and the revolution in battle hardware came hard on the heels of that discovery. Such strength of structure combined with such a lack of relative mass was extraordinary and game-changing. Professor Helena Markov, Director, Extra-Reptilian Construct Organization. Behemoths could be spotted by the dust they threw up, which drifted on the prevailing winds, causing clouds to form at low level, slowly rising on thermals to be dispersed by stronger winds. Far to the east, a dull smudge indicated the Virunga, and a similar distance to the west, the third Math Behemoth trudged along, playing its part in the endless game of Behemoth chess. And there, clearer as they closed in, was the Maputo, moving steadily northwards, and not looking to be in any particular distress.
"Hey, Risa, you passed the brain pattern scan, then?" said Max.
"Never doubted it. I'd have paid to see Muller's face when he got the results, though."
"How are you holding up?"
"Honestly, better than ever," said Kalani. "Weird, but it's almost like nothing happened yesterday."
"That's got to be good, right?" said Max,
Annabeth's warning sounding in his head.
"I'll let you know."
Max focused on the Maputo. There was some degradation on the spine and flank armour, visible as pale smears even from C2's distance, but nothing that might signify cracking. He opened the Chevron comm.
"Can anybody see a limp?"
"She looks pretty smooth from up here," said Lozano, "though she's slowing."
"Copy that, Los X. Eyes open, C2. Let's see if there's any crackle in her tail rise. Keep your distance. Skipper, we are on point."
"Copy, Halex," said Valera. "C1 going for the close-up."
Below them, the Maputo's spine ordnance bristled. 40-millimeter autocannons sat in their retractable housings on each vertebra. Anti-aircraft launchers swiveled and tracked. The Maputo came to a halt, dust surging from her 30 pairs of legs. Immediately, the tail began to rise, and the flight deck would be deploying from her belly. Max could see no evidence of any struggle as the mighty muscles engaged and the tail tip began to curl up from the ground.
"Anything anyone wants to say?" he asked.
"What time are we meeting in Gargan's?"
asked Calder.
"Usual time, and it's your round, Halex," said Borini. "Musing over alcohol would be a better use of our time," said Schmidt. "Keep it tight, folks," said Max. "Here we go. She has got problems. Circle on station."
Max watched the Maputo make a slight lean forwards. Her head dipped, and the front eight pairs of legs bent to varying degrees at the knee. She was struggling to lift her tail, no doubt about it. Max thumbed his open comm.
"Flight comm, Val-X, Step-X, C2 has intel. Distinct muscle and spinal degradation indicated by extreme effort required to raise the tail."
"Confirmed," said Valera. "We're seeing significant muscle vibration in all legs along the right flank. Flank armour appears dry, evidence of minor cracking."
"Flight comm copies. Inferno X, prepare to disengage. Step X, I am tracking the 10 blips inbound on your altitude. Confirm spots on a heading of 165.
"Step X copies."
There was a pause while Stepanek and C3 searched the sky.
"Spots confirmed. Observation suggests extreme pace. Flight comm, please confirm M and M."
"Step X, flight comm, blips indicate make and model are Dragon-class hunter killers. They're drakes, Step X."
"Copy, flight comm," said Stepanek. "Turbocharged, too. Jess X, Rob X, eyes on the incoming."
"You recommend you complete obs and head home, Val X."
"I hear you, flight comm, complying."
"Flight comm out."
"Inferno X, Val X, let's form up. C2, C3, merge at 1,000. C1 will complete inspection. Single circuit of target, then ascend to 1,000. Keep an eye on those drakes. Val X out."
"Distinct grind in the aft launchers," said Abraham. "They're taking on too much sand from 15th vertebra backwards."
"Copy, Abex," said Valera. "No closer. Jack X, you too. Move out 50.
"I hear you, Skipper," said Jax. 40 mils tracking. Can't see any degradation from here."
"Time to go, Martha," whispered Max.
He twitched his right arm up and back, and Martha swept into an easy climb, her rotation allowing her to take in the approaching enemy, presumably dispatched by the Virunga to chase Inferno X away. Max noted a very slight tremor through Martha's flanks.
"What's up?"
With C2 climbing in his wake, he continued his rotation. Using Martha's eyes, he could see Stepanek and C3 heading towards them.
Holy mother, but those boys are coming in quick,
said Roberts, Stepanek's second in the Chevron.
Descending and tracking, still incoming. Are you getting this, Stepex?
Copy, Robex,
said Stepanek, his voice measured and calm as always.
I reckon we're about to be buzzed. Heads up, C3, let's not get complacent.
Good call, boss, said Fellows. I'll try not to poke the nest.
You too, C2,
said Max.
Dudes don't look friendly. Well, we are assessing one of their behemoths for an assault,
said Schmidt.
Hardly an excuse, said Borini.
Bloody maths, just can't take a joke, can they?
Said Lozano. The two chevrons merged at 1,000 and formed a 360-degree defensive flight pattern. Drake necks craned, pilots' eyes squinted, all of them watching the incoming enemy. Their relative numbers didn't suggest an attack, but Max could sense the disquiet among the squad, and the comm silence confirmed it. He knew how confident Inferno X was, but he also knew Martha was uneasy, and no doubt the other Drakes were too.
"What is it?"
he asked her. She couldn't reply, but he felt her desire to accelerate.
"I feel you, Princess. We'll be fine."
The enemy were at about 3 clicks and closing hard when Martha barked a warning.
"Inferno X, Halex, there's something astray here. Suggest C2 and C3 adopt assault formations and increase speed. Valex, are you done?"
"Nearly. We just need..."
"They're breaking! 5 of them coming down to the deck!"
Jess X's voice was loud and urgent.
"Inferno X, assault formation," ordered Valera. "We're coming to you. C1, break off and climb hard. 5 incoming. Flightcom, we are under attack."
"Flightcom copies. I see no more bogeys. They are 10 in all. Break and retreat. We do not need a fight today."
"But we've already got one," thought Max, still surprised the enemy would risk it with fewer numbers. Inferno X Drakes broke observation formation. Wings and bodies crowded close as the chevrons formed up in wing pairs. Max and Kalani rose through the middle of the throng, swinging about to face the incoming Math Drakes. They were quick, and Martha's vision swept ahead of his, sensing threat. The Math Drakes were already on them. Borini was still climbing and turning, and couldn't see the danger. Max turned to help.
"Boar X, fold and fall! Fold and fall! Enemy inco-" "Shit!"
Fast, too fast, the Math Drake battered into Borini's back, thrusting its claws deep into the Inferno Drake's scales. Borini was driven hard across the sky, his Drake's wings washed back by the force of the impact.
"Kalex, let's toast that fucker,"
said Max, and drove down to attack. The enemy Drake shuddered violently, and Borini and his Drake were encased in a powerful blue light that fizzed and crackled, over, under, and between the scales. Borini's howl of pain over the comm was matched by his Drake's agonized roar. The enemy let go, smoke pouring from cracks in the Inferno Drake's armor, and she dropped dead from the sky, wings tattered and burning. Max and Kalani shot through the smoke trail after the enemy Drake, which had already dropped into a steep dive to gather speed.
"Boar X is down! Break! Break!"
yelled Max.
"Don't offer them targets! Combine for assault and stick to your wing! Valex, we need you!"
But Max could see Valera had problems of her own. C1 had been spaced around the Maputo, circling out of flank fire range, and was trying to reform on the climb up to the rest of the squad. The other 5 Math Drakes were on them, chasing and scattering them. 2 swept across the Maputo spine and pounced on an Inferno Drake in a steep climb, separated from her wing partner. The first snagged her tail with its jaws, as the second swept around her and played searing fire all the way up her belly and across the pilot pouch. The pilot shrieked and fell silent, and the ruined Drake stalled before falling end over end towards the ground.
"Lankovsky!" yelled Valera. "Get your wings out! Lankovsky!"
"He's gone, Skipper. Inferno X is 2 down."
"Copy, Halex. Inferno X, Valex. Orders, orders."
"Enemy on your 6, Jess X. Roll and dive. I'm in your wake."
Robert's voice cut across Valera.
"Still on you. Loop up." "Shit. You're not steep enough."
"Where is he?"
said Jess X.
"Tight 90 right and dive. Tight!" called Roberts.
Max searched the sky and saw the final moments. Roberts caught the attacking Drake a fleeting blow on its right flank, but it barely flinched from its trajectory. Jess X was hard into a right-hand loop, and the Math Drake surged inside her turn. The beast's jaws clamped the top of her Drake's, and fire engulfed its head. Those jaws bit down harder, and the Inferno Drake was beheaded. Jess X screamed as she plummeted to the desert.
"Jesse!" roared Roberts. "You fuck! You filthy math fuck!"
"Inferno X, form on me in fours and threes at 800. Keep it calm. Keep it steady," ordered Valera. "Flight comm, Val X. Inferno X is three down."
But Max could hear the shock edging her voice, and in the comm chatter, their indomitable confidence was shaken.
"Copy, Val X."
Muller couldn't hide his shock either. Max searched the sky, using Martha's eyes to help him try and identify the paths their enemy would take. In among the sweeps, dives, and rolls of the Inferno Drakes, he saw the smears of slate-grey enemy drakes weaving serenely through the chaos his squad was creating to deny them clear targets. Killarney moved up to his right just a few wingbeats away. The airwaves were full of location calls and warnings. Fire strafed the air below him as Monteith and Nugent whipped by in pursuit of an enemy.
"Call X, let's..."
A flash of grey, and Killarney was suddenly shunted through the air towards him, her loss of forward momentum taking her behind him. Max arched his back and neck, simultaneously dragging his arms into his sides, and Martha snapped her wings closed and set her body into a tight backwards loop.
"Fight it, Call X!"
"He's not quite got me," replied Killarney. "Rolling here, Max. I need you.
Coming round hard."
Max used Martha's eyes to fix on Killarney, and when he saw her, he unwound the loop and powered Martha forwards. Killarney was barrel rolling, keeping the enemy from taking a hold.
"Steady on my mark."
"Copy, Halex."
"Now!"
Killarney's rolls ceased, and her drake spat fire into her attacker's scales. The math drake grabbed at her drake's spine with its talons, and in the same moment, Martha thumped hard into it, her own talons raking along its flank and sending it spinning away. Max suggested type fire, and twin beams of flame spat out into the empty space where the drake had been.
"Thanks, Max."
"Any time. Clear air low."
Max and Killarney dived into the narrowing airspace between C1 and the melee. Messages on the open comm were urgent, but remained calm, despite the stunning start to the attack and the losses they had suffered. The math drakes were reforming in a V formation, about half a click to the north of Inferno X. They stayed on station and began flying a helix pattern in formation.
"Very pretty," muttered Monteith.
"They were good enough to give us a bloody nose," said Valera.
"Got some weight and ordnance too," said Redfern.
"All right, people. We've lost some, and now it's our turn. You have your threes and fours. Go tight comm in your fire teams. I will retain open status."
"Inferno X, flight comm. Break and return to the hog. Do not engage."
"Negative, flight comm. They aren't going to let us through."
"Roger that."
Muller sounded irritable.
"Minimize contact. Flight comm out."
"Copy, flight comm. Inferno X, you heard the boss. We're going straight on till morning," said Valera.
"We're running away," said Stepanek.
"We're living to fight another day. Something about these drakes stinks, and we need a weak spot," said Valera. "We have our orders. Doesn't mean we can't give them a scratch or two on our way past."
"Sounds good, Skipper," said Max.
"Your support warms my tired old bones," said Valera. "Break and strike. Reform two clicks south at 1500. Sun's out. Let's use it. Valex out."
The fluid formation of Inferno X gave the enemy no hint of their intent. Valera led them on, the trios and quartets of drakes flying over and around each other as they came. Max felt the thrill through Martha's body and wondered for a moment why the Maths wanted to take them on, never mind their marginal technical superiority.
"Collex, Montex, Nugex, you're hearing me okay?"
"Sadly," said Killarney.
"For my sins," said Monteith.
"Like a waking nightmare," said Nugent.
May you all suffer maddening crotch itches every time you fly. So, bottom of the V is ours. We're going to count them off as they burn in the sand. Montex, Nujex, fly the flanks for follow-up to complete the kill. Collex, we're going straight in. Rip the fucker up a little.
Go, Inferno X, said Val.
The squad surged forwards, Max suggesting maximum speed to Martha. He was pressed back in his pouch, Martha's roar joining the chorus. Max led his quartet out to the right. Valera's dived under him, Red Fern's over him, and Stepanek's chasing across behind. He tipped his left arm, and Martha swooped across the line and squared up with the target, now just a few beats away and heading for them.
In we go, said Max.
Monteith and Nugent pressed ahead on the flanks. Kalani came to his right-hand side. Nothing else needed saying. It was payback time, whatever Flightcom had ordered.
Hope your teeth are sharp, Martha, he said. They've got some armour by the look of them.
Slate grey and sleek, his target loomed ever larger. Max imagined a grappling attack, and Martha tensed her neck and claws. The enemy came on, determined not to flinch first in the deadly game of chicken. Max accelerated further, Kalani at his side, both drakes homing in. Still the math came on. Kalani edged left an upper fraction, and Max smiled. The bastard was caught. Max imagined the strike, and Martha cocked, swiveled and struck, jaws snapping on empty air, claws grasping at nothing. Max flew on a heartbeat into clear air before he understood what had happened. It just wasn't possible to change direction and move away that quickly.
On me, Collex, said Max.
He dropped his right arm hard to his side and stretched out his left arm, sure that the math drake had gone past him high into his right. Martha turned hard, her head craning to see.
He's on me, called Nugent. Holy shit, he's fast. I'm... shit!
Max raced for Nugent, seeing the grey shape batter into the Inferno X drake and pour fire over her back and onto her left wing. Monteith hurtled in, his drake's claws thumping into the enemy's flank, sharp teeth sinking into its neck. He tore the beast from Nugent just in time for Max to line up.
Max, on you! Shouted Nugent.
Max sensed the threat in the next moment and threw his arms up, slapping Martha's wings together above her head. They dropped out of the sky, the math drake breathing fire through the space where they'd been.
Thanks, Nujex, I owe you. Where are you? On your three and going down. Think I can control it. Damn it!
Max pushed Martha up again, and she began to rise back into the combat zone. Right in front of him, two enemies engulfed an Inferno X drake. One tore through a wing, and the other grabbed its tail and its rear talons, shaking its victim like a puppet on a string, before severing it with a single bite. The drake shrieked in agony, and the two drakes let the stricken reptile go. She tumbled away, rudderless, her tail spouting blood, her one wing flapping in futility.
Who went down?
Fellows, said Kalani. Get back up here, Max. I need your eyes.
Copy that, Collex. Monts, the Nuge is down. Shield him. We've got your back. Copy, Halex, said Monteith.
Max took in the scene while Martha closed in on Kalani. The enemy squadron was everywhere, reacting faster, turning harder, and flying more powerfully. It wasn't much of an edge, but it didn't have to be. Max flew hard through the centre of the combat. A math drake shot in front of him, chased by three drakes, including Valera, whose mark he could clearly see on the shiny underbelly of her drake. The math drake dumped electronic countermeasures from the base of its tail. All drakes had that capacity, creating sparking, crackling globes, 50 centimetres in diameter, to deflect incoming missiles. But these ones didn't float. They flew like they had a purpose. Max turned Martha onto a curved trajectory over the chase, using her eyes to sweep for threats, and his own to watch the battle unfold. Valera had seen the ECMs, and her trio rolled and bucked to dodge the balls of lightning.
On your six, Halex, said Kalani. Monson knew you're out of it. No pursuit.
Good. Follow me and watch this bastard fly. We need to get an angle on what they're about.
A huge burst of flame to his right distracted him for a moment. A quick glance showed him another crippled Inferno X-Drake plummeting from the sky, and two Math Drakes soaring through the smoke trail, four Infernos on their tails.
Holy mother. Inferno X, five down.